to be with you this morning. They tell me I have a rather limited time here, so I'm going to restrain from all the things I'd like to say in the way of introduction, just to say I know there's a host of folks sitting out there who were either former students or who were at the college where I was dean of students. And what I want to say to you at the beginning, during those years when I was dean of students, I don't remember that stuff. So don't worry about it. I have so many people tell me they think they're embarrassed to be in my presence because they did some silly things. Just don't worry about that. I'm just thankful people are serving the Lord. It's good to be with you for this week, half a week series. And I'm thrilled to have the privilege of speaking on behalf of the Lord. It is the greatest responsibility a man can ever have. So I want you to know that there's always, on my part, a great deal of prayer that goes into this. And I covet your prayers on my behalf, that whatever I say will be in accord with the will of God, and that the glory and the emphasis will be to Him and to His Word all the way through. Let's turn to Romans 15 as a beginning place. Romans 15 and verse 13. The titles of our subjects have been published, so you know. Let's see, left is forward. Good. You know that the title of this lesson relates to all joy and peace in believing, and it comes directly from Romans chapter 15, verse 13. Now may the God of hope fill you with all joy and peace in believing, that you may abound in hope by the power of the Holy Spirit. There's a lot being written in our time about happiness. Kind of interesting that for years and years and years, the psychology, field of psychology, was filled with information about what was wrong with us and how to fix the wrong things. And the big books that the psychologists used were filled with depression, anxiety, problems, challenges, and how to help those. Starting in the late 90s, there's been a pretty good move among psychologists and researchers to investigate the subject of human happiness. And so there's been a lot studied about that in the last 15 years. And it's not my intent to go over all of that, except just to say to you, this is a hot field right now. Harvard Magazine came out in February 2007 with an article on the science of happiness. And Craig Lambert wrote in that article that the comprehensive textbook of psychiatry contained 1,000 lines on anxiety and depression, hundreds of lines on terror, shame, guilt, anger, and fear, 5 lines on hope, 1 line on joy, and nothing on compassion, forgiveness, and love. Not one thing in the whole document. So no wonder that Martin Seligman, in his presidential address to the American Psychological Association in 98, urged psychologists to turn toward an understanding and a building of human strengths to complement our emphasis on healing human damage. And so positive psychology was launched. And I will tell you just a couple of statistics just to show you I'm not making this up. The teaching at colleges has involved courses in this area, starting with one class of 20 students in Harvard at 1999, and ending some 7 years later with over 200 courses, and Tal Ben-Shahar's class at Harvard had 854 students in 2007, the largest enrollment in any class. And it was a study of human happiness. Well, they've drawn some interesting conclusions, and I'll just tell you the end from the beginning. What they found out is exactly what the Bible teaches on what happiness is about. It's always interesting to me that intellectuals do a great deal of research and study and depth of study and come up with something that folks who've studied theology, who've studied the Bible carefully, have known for centuries. I want to talk to you a little bit about happiness today. The word happiness in our language comes from the same word as the root word for happen. So in English, happiness is tied to happenings, at least in terms of the etymology of the word. And so it really is tied to things external to ourselves. And I think that's the way we use the word for the most part. It's measured by external events. So I thought what I'd do this morning is start with some external events. And if you pardon me, I'm going to use things that happened to me because I know them better than anything else. But I'd like you to understand, as we talk about those, I want you to think about things that have happened to you because we're all in a common field here. And if there were time, one of the good things to do this morning would be to get you to give some examples as well. So promise me that you'll be thinking about things that have happened to you while I give you some illustrations from my own life. So here we are on a number line from birth to death. And what I've done is along that line, I've placed a few happinesses. That's what that stands for. That H stands for a happiness. And I want to tell you about a few of mine. I've had some really neat happinesses. It was 1953. My family lived in Holland at that time. My father was a missionary over there after the war. A lot of our brethren pressed hard to go to Europe and Japan after World War II to evangelize. And so our family moved to Holland in 1949. I was 4 years old when we moved over there. I was 8 when this year came along. And I'll never forget it. This is one of my happinesses. Dad came and got all of us kids up. I had 2 older sisters. And he got us out of bed, brought us into their bedroom, and there lay my mother with a brand new baby lying on her breast, whom my dad had delivered. The doctor didn't make it. And so the umbilical cord was still attached, and for an 8-year-old, that's traumatic. And Mama was nursing him, and we all stood around the bed, and my dad led us in prayer. And we all rejoiced at the safety of that little boy. By the way, it was a boy. I had 2 sisters already. And he was 8 years younger. So I can tell you, he was our little boy. All of us. We all helped raise that boy. So that was a really special time. And it seemed to me, as a little fellow, that everything was just right that day. You know, the family gathered around. Everything was warm and cozy, and that's happiness. Well, I've thrown in a few other happinesses here. I won't have time to talk about a lot of them, but I must tell you about 2 or 3 others anyway. We went out to a Tchaikovsky concert. Do you like Tchaikovsky? Oh, you talk about romantic. So the Tampa Philharmonic had put on a wonderful performance that night. And my Marilyn had gone with me. We were at Florida College, by the way. And we had a wonderful supper, went out to this wonderful concert, and afterwards we went down to the Tampa Yacht Arena down there. And the moon was perfect. And we stood there looking out over Tampa Bay, the moon shining down on that glassy surface of Tampa Bay. And I asked Marilyn if she'd marry me. And I told her I loved her. And thank the Lord she said she loved me back. And that was the beginning of a 46-year love affair. And everything was just right that night. It was perfect. It was some years later, and it was a Saturday. I don't know why these things always happen at night. It was almost 10 o'clock in the evening, and I had to preach the next day. And Marilyn said, it's time to go. So we rushed to the hospital, and right around midnight, this little one was born. And that was back in the days, you young folks, when we didn't know what was coming. And it was also in the early days of when they allowed the daddy to go in the delivery room with the mama. That was incredible for us. I got to be in there with her. And when they brought that little child forth and they held it up, it was a boy, y'all. We already had three of the other kind, which we love to death. But we got a little boy 7 years after we'd had our twins. And after they cleaned him up and got everything fixed, they took Marilyn and me and this little boy into a room and left us there for 1 hour by ourselves. They called it bonding. Oh, folks. You sit there and look into the eyes of that little brand new baby and snuggle him together. I tell you, there's not anything more precious than that. I hope you've had lots of those through the years. Happinesses. Looks like I've erased a few of them. I want to give you one more from my family. We could plug in some others here. And again, please be thinking about yours. There was a day when one of our twins came home from high school. And she was crying. And you say, why is that a happiness? Here's what she was crying about. She said, Daddy, in school today, we were in a class of about 30 kids, and we had a movie in that class. And it was the filthiest movie I've ever seen. I hated it. There was gross violence, horrible language. There was frontal nudity. And there I was stuck in the classroom. And I didn't know if I should get up and walk out, be rude to the teacher. I was totally embarrassed. I closed my eyes and shut my ears as much as I could. It was embarrassing. I feel like I was defiled. Well, I got on the phone to the principal of King High School, and I said, is this what's happening at your school now? I'm a graduate from the first year that school opened. I hope it's not the case that we've now degenerated to the point that your teachers show in the classrooms filthy movies. And he said, Dr. Payne, I will go check into this, and I'll call you back in short order. And here's what he found out. They had a substitute teacher that day who was not following county policy. And she had shown this movie to five classes of 30 to 35 students. And he said, Dr. Payne, I'm embarrassed. This lady will never be back at our school again. She's been properly reprimanded. But here's what disturbs me. Out of all the students who saw that movie that day, you are the only parent that called me. That disturbed me more than anything. It was a happiness to me that my daughter was so offended, she wanted something done about it. Can I say something to all of you here as a little bit of an aside? As we sit and watch things go to the devil, will you sit on your hands and let it happen, or will you speak up? There's still plenty of good folks around. But I think the bad folks are taking over. And I hope you'll stand up and be counted wherever you have opportunity and speak out for things that are just wrong and say, we're not going to have this. We have anything to do with it. I think the Lord wants us to have as many happinesses as we can get. So I ask you to turn to Ecclesiastes 9 with me. And I want to show you that the Lord in this book of wisdom speaks of those kinds of things. Ecclesiastes 9, verse 9, says, "Live joyfully with the wife whom you love all the days of your vain life, which he's given you under the sun, all the days of vanity. For that is your portion in life and the labor for which you perform under the sun." Can I make a little advice to all of the husbands in this audience, young or old? I don't care how long you've been married, your wife still needs you to think of her as your girlfriend. She still needs you to be romantic. She still needs you to plan special things. I was a slow learner. I'm confessing my sins. And what would happen is, it would be too long a time before we had done something really special together. All of us live busy lives. And it's easy to neglect family, isn't it? And what I would do is let our relationship, Marilyn and my relationship, go too long. And it would start suffering. So may I give you a word of advice, men? If it's been 2 weeks... 3 weeks since you let her know she's the most special thing on God's earth to you, you're in trouble. But that's not the way to look at it. You haven't taken the advantage to have one of these happinesses. Don't let your life go by without building into it as many of those as we can get. And living joyfully with the wife of your youth, why would you not want to take every opportunity to do something special together? There's enough tough times. And then verse 10, notice. "Whatever your hand finds to do, you do it with your might, for there's no work or device or knowledge or wisdom in the grave where you're going." You know what happiness, folks, is when you make an A on my calculus test. When you've worked yourself to the bone to do something excellent, you've given it your best, it's not just the A on the test, it's what you put into it. And that's true of anything in life. And the Lord says that's one of your happinesses. You do it with your might. And you can rejoice in it. And one more in chapter 11. Verse 9, "Rejoice, O young man, in your youth, and let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. Walk in the ways of your heart and in the sight of your eyes." So you young people in here, you're just so blessed in this church to have so many. Take advantage of your youthful vigor. Now, I think it's a little overdone to get up and run a half marathon on Sunday morning. But you must like it. Take advantage of the vigor of your youth and rejoice in it. Remembering, of course, what the end of this passage says, "But know that for all these God will bring you into judgment. Therefore, remove sorrow from your heart, put away evil from your flesh, for childhood and youth are vanity." It's going away, folks. It's not lasting. But take advantage of what you have. I think he's telling us you put as many happinesses in there as you can get. So fill it up with H's. Because here's what you'll learn if you haven't already, and anybody that's lived in this life any length of time at all knows very well that most of life is not warm and cozy and fuzzy and wonderful. That's why I like to paint it like that. You see, in 1977, I was sitting in my office with Almond Williams when I got a phone call from my dad. And he said, "Buddy, there's some terrible things that have happened." It was the last day of work for Jimmy. That's my little brother. It was the last day of work. He had gone back to work an extra week when he didn't even have to be there. He had quit that job to start preaching the gospel. But his former boss, who was a Christian up there in Tillicoochee, said, come back and help me one more week. So it was Friday afternoon of that last day. And they were out in the orange groves, lifting up these huge submergible pumps. And something happened with that truck. And the whole thing fell on Jimmy and killed him. Our little Jimmy was dead. We just had a ceremony just a little while ago for a young lady at the college who was in a tragic car accident and killed instantly. It's not hard for me, folks, to cry with people who suffer those things. Not hard at all. I don't understand it to this day. And I can tell you, my poor mama never got over that to the day she died. And family gatherings weren't quite the same. But we still had our happinesses. But they had little tents of challenges. You've had this, haven't you? Because most of life is not warm and cozy and fuzzy. And the older we get, the more we experience pain, suffering, challenges, and some of the most hurtful things. Of the challenges we face among ourselves in a congregation many times, and any congregation that's existed any length of time has had challenges. I have no doubt you've had your share of them here. So what do you mean, be happy? I think the answer in Scripture, way beyond what these researchers are talking about, is that we must go beyond happiness as we conceive of that. Generally, it's tied to things external to ourselves. And we must reach a level that the Bible describes as blessedness. Don't you confuse those two words. They're not the same. So the psalmist says, blessed is the man that walks not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor stands in the way of sinners, nor sits in the seat of the scornful. For his delight is in the law of the Lord, and in his law does he meditate day and night. And he shall be like a tree planted by the rivers of water that brings forth its fruit in its season. His leaf also shall not wither, and whatever he does shall prosper. But the ungodly are not so, but are like the chaff which the wind drives away. Therefore the ungodly shall not stand in the day of judgment, nor sinners in the congregation of the righteous. For the Lord knows the way of the righteous, but the way of the ungodly shall perish. What's blessedness like? Well, I want to pause here for just a moment, and please bear with me. The illustration I want to give you has a point. You may think we're never going to get there, but I have an illustration I want to give you that I think ties in with what blessedness is about. When I was in high school, there was a brand new curriculum project in all the sciences. You know why? Because in 1956, a very scary thing happened. Now, this is a class. Some of you are old, maybe nobody in here is that old. I don't know. You remember what happened in 1956 that scared the United States of America? That's exactly right. Sputnik was put into outer space by the Russians. We thought they were going to take over outer space and rule the world. So our federal government and state government started pouring money into science education and trying to beef up what we taught in schools so that we could catch up with the Russians. And I was one of the ones that was privileged to benefit from some of those things that happened in the early 60s with all these curriculum review projects. Well, I had a physics class in high school, PSSC physics, and it was phenomenally well done, I thought. One day we came into class, and the teacher turned off all the lights. It was pitch dark in that room. You had to find your way to the seats. He didn't have any little corner or anything where light could get in. And you sat down at your seat. He didn't even call roll that day. And he turned the movie on. So picture, here's a movie screen in front of you. And as it comes on, you see two men sitting at a table. And one of them takes hold of a little device, looks like a hockey puck with a handle on it. And he pushes it, and it goes kind of floating across the table to another guy sitting over here, who then takes a hold of it and pushes it back to the other fellow. So you're sitting there watching two grown men chuck a hockey puck back and forth. There wasn't any sound, total black ground. That's all you saw. Very boring. And again, with no sound, those two men still sitting there, the camera starts to pan back from that scene. And what you see as the camera gets farther away is that behind that black background that was right behind them, there was another scene back behind it. And it was going that way. You ever sat by somebody at a stoplight and think you were moving? When it was really somebody else that was moving? Well, when you look at that, you're not sure, is that going that way or is this going this way? And so there was a scene back behind it that was moving. And then as the camera panned farther away from that event, you got far enough back that the camera actually was now able to see that that whole system was mounted on a huge circular thing, kind of like a lazy Susan at your table. It was turning around like this. So those two guys sitting up there at that table were actually turning around on a lazy Susan. Couldn't see it before because the camera was on the lazy Susan. And then the question came on the screen. Which way is that puck moving? That was brilliant. Which way was it moving? And the answer, ladies and gentlemen, which came up later on that screen, was it's all relative to your frame of reference. Because motion is meaningless without a frame of reference. Did you know, ladies and gentlemen, that you are moving while you're sitting there? You don't believe that. According to the best scientific information we have, you're sitting on the surface of an object that is circular, and you're moving at a rate of one rotation every 24 hours. In order to accomplish that, you better be whipping along pretty fast. You're moving like this. In addition to that, that object upon which you're sitting, relative to another big object we call the sun, is revolving around that sun at a rate of once every 365 point something days. That's pretty fast. In addition to that, that whole system of the sun with its planets is moving. In addition to that, that whole system is part of a galaxy called the Milky Way galaxy, which is moving that way. Are you dizzy yet? Why is it you don't even perceive any of that motion? It's because you're on the frame of reference that's doing the moving. Okay, I told you you would wonder where this is going. Here's what I'm convinced of. Blessedness for a Christian is when someone has figured out his frame of reference for his whole life, where he fits in the scheme of things, and how life is measured relative to the most important thing there is. I hope that's the first bell. Got 3 minutes. What did Jesus say in Matthew 3? Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when men revile you and persecute you and say all manner of evil against you falsely for my sake. Rejoice and be exceedingly glad, for great is your reward in heaven, for so persecuted they the prophets that went before you. Blessed when folks are horrible to you. That makes no sense. But the word blessed is used. I'll tell you what I'm convinced of. When by God's grace we found our frame of reference, we know who we are, where we're going, how we fit into God's great scheme of things, it's then and only then that we can achieve blessedness. And that's what being a Christian is all about, beloved. It is figuring out who you are, where you fit, and what God has you here for. And if you can ever figure that out and put yourself in that frame of reference, it doesn't make any difference what happens to you. You're blessed. And it undergirds everything you're doing. And it is then that you can say with Isaiah, you will keep him in perfect peace whose mind is stayed on you because he trusts in you. I want to read that again. You will keep him in perfect peace whose mind is stayed on you because he trusts in you. Trust in the Lord forever, for in Yah the Lord is everlasting strength. For he brings down those who dwell on high, the lofty city. He lays it low. He lays it low to the ground. He brings it to the dust. The foot shall tread it down, the feet of the poor and the steps of the needy. You trust in him and you keep yourself focused on him. And I close with this wonderful passage. Romans the 8th chapter. What shall we say to these things? If God is for us, who can be against us? He who did not spare his own son, but delivered him up for us all, how shall he not with him also freely give us all things? Who shall bring a charge against God's elect? It is God who justifies. Who is he who condemns? It is Christ who died, and furthermore is also risen, and is even at the right hand of God, who also makes intercession for us. Who shall separate us from the love of Christ? Shall tribulation, persecution, famine, nakedness, peril, sword? As it is written, for your sake we are killed all the day long. We are counted as sheep for the slaughter. Yet in all these things we are more than conquerors through him who loved us. You see, beloved, your perspective, your frame of reference is everything. And it turns any circumstance into blessed. That's our lesson. And thank you for your good, careful attention this morning.